All right, if you would be turning to Ephesians chapter 5. I really enjoy fruit, which causes Daryl a bit of grief. As you see, I'll often eat it in my office while I'm studying, and then I just throw the peel or the core or the rind in the trash can behind me and then forget about it. And this causes smells and fruit flies and other insects, which then Daryl has to deal with. And recently, Mariana told me a trick to get rid of the fruit flies, but I don't know if that's going to cut it. I don't know if that's going to be enough. Well, the word fruit, it's used quite a bit in the Bible. And so before we start, I'd like to do a little excursus on fruit. Well, the main word for it in the Old Testament, peri, okay, it was used more than 100 times, and the main word for fruit in the New Testament, karpos, was used more than 60. So what is fruit? Well, of course, it's the edible pulp surrounding the seed or seeds of many plants and trees, often a good source of vitamin C, vitamin A, and fiber. But this isn't a nutrition course. Well, sometimes the word is used literally. For example, in Genesis chapter 1, verse 11. But the majority of the time in the Bible, it's used metaphorically. It's used for the fruit of the womb, the offspring of animals and man. It's used for the rewards or the consequences of our actions and deeds. But the bulk of the time, though, it's simply used for the natural product that comes from something being what it is. Okay, an apple tree naturally produces apples, an orange tree naturally produces oranges. In Matthew chapter 7, Jesus said, "Beware of the false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Grapes are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor figs from thistles, are they? So every good tree bears good fruit, but the bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot produce bad fruit, nor can a bad tree produce good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. So then you will know them by their fruits." Well, you'll also remember the passage in John chapter 15, where Jesus described God as the divine gardener, the vine dresser who looks for fruit on the branches connected to the true vine, Jesus Christ. We are those branches. And he said that the branches that bear fruit, they'd be pruned so they could bear more fruit, but the branches that did not bear fruit or did not stay connected to the true vine, did not stay connected to Jesus, well, they'd be taken away and they'd be thrown into the fire. All right, well, this week and the next, we're going to be looking through this section in Ephesians chapter 5. And my desire is for us to come away understanding the kind of fruit we need to be bearing now as Christians and the importance of it. And this week, we're going to be looking at the unfruitful deeds of darkness in verses 5 through 8. You see, in this chapter, Paul contrasted what we were with what we are now. And he showed the unfruitful deeds of darkness, as he called them in verse 11, next to the fruit of light. Now, he could have said the fruit of darkness, but instead he called it unfruitful. It doesn't produce anything worthwhile. Well, let's begin by just reading through these verses again here, verses 3 through 8 together. "But immorality or impurity or greed must not even be named among you, as is proper among saints. And there must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know with certainty, that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words. For because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore, do not be partakers with them, for you were formerly darkness." So he started with the lifestyle in verses 3 and 4. And verse 3 is the walk. Now, saints or holy ones, that's just a term referring to Christians, not the football team. Nor is it some kind of elite group of super religious dead people. I mean, you hear people say, "Well, I'm no saint." Well, according to the New Testament, if you're a Christian, you are a saint. Now, obviously, if we're going to go by that moniker, holy ones, We're not to be involved in unholy behavior. We have been sanctified, that is, set apart by God in a special place. He said that these are things that are not even to be named among us. Now, this is not talking about actually naming them, or we couldn't read the scriptures. We couldn't read them out loud. I think it's more along the lines of the NIV, or it puts it like this. There must not be a hint of. Or in other words, the world should not be able to point to these things in Christians. Christians, they are supposed to be beyond reproach in these areas. Now, sadly, as you know, that's not always the case. And non-Christians, well, they get a kick out of pointing that out. Well, so-and-so says he's a Christian, but, well, you know, he does this or that. See, I told you, all Christians are hypocrites. Well, the first thing is immorality. And this comes from the Greek word porneia, and our word pornography comes from it. It's an umbrella term, all right? It includes any illicit sexual activity and behavior that is outside of marriage, which takes many different forms. In Roman society, well, it was filled with sexual immorality of every kind, and Ephesus was no exception. And you see, their temple of Diana there in Ephesus, it was considered one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, and it was known far and wide for its hundreds of priestesses, which were actually sacred prostitutes. So imagine what it would be like growing up in a culture, growing up in a place that's just over-sexualized and saturated with sexual perversion. Oh, wait. We don't have to imagine that, do we? You see, like them, our culture, it is also becoming a very immoral, sex-obsessed culture. I recently read about a mandatory school assembly at Boulder High School. It was a few years ago. And this is what the speaker said. Okay, keep in mind, these are teenagers. Many of them can't even drive yet. We know you are going to have sex. We know that you are going to experiment and explore your sexuality. We know you are going to take drugs. Let's figure out a way so that you can do these things and not kill yourself in the process. End quote. That's the culture we live in. That's what they're teaching our kids in the schools. That's what they hear. God created sexuality, not Hollywood. And it is a beautiful thing when it is practiced in the context that God intended, right? Within the lifetime commitment of a husband and wife. Oh, God doesn't care that much. It's not that big of a deal. If I could, I'd raise one eyebrow really high like Spock at this point. Hebrews 13:4. Marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. Well, next he said, any impurity. Now, impurity could also be translated as uncleanness. It has to do with our morals. And so this is going to be any activity that God disapproves of and that would make us unclean in his sight. Okay, and notice that he said any. Of course, there's some long lists of sins in passages like Romans chapter 1, Galatians chapter 5, 1 Timothy chapter 1 that would fall into this. And some of these things, when you look at them, they're things that were created by God to be used in a certain area, like sex. But we've messed it up, you see. We've misused it for our own personal self-gratification outside the guidelines which God has given to us, the purpose for which he created them. And we can clearly see what happens to a society when they give themselves over to these things. And then greed or covetousness. That's the excessive desire to acquire and possess more. Never being satisfied with what you have. It's the greedy desire to have and to hold as many earthly possessions and as much wealth as possible. Now, you can find articles and books and websites that try to argue that greed is actually a good thing. but not the Bible. So what's wrong with it? Well, besides the fact that we are never content with what we have, which is a biblical virtue, it can lead to the use of unlawful or underhanded means to obtain it. It can lead to someone putting their hope and trust in money instead of God. It can lead to jealousy, as we're always comparing ourselves to the others around us. Now, you may have heard of this interesting way that Eskimos kill wolves. Now, I don't know if it's true. You know, there are lots of different ideas and opinions on the internet, otherwise known as the worldwide rumor mill. But this is what I read. So the Eskimos, what they will do is they will take a very sharp knife and they'll cover it in blood and let it freeze. And then they'll put another coat of blood and let it freeze and another coat of blood and let it freeze. And after a while, you've got this blood popsicle, if you will. And they put it out there in the woods somewhere. They fasten it to something. And, well, wolves, they smell blood, and it just puts them in a frenzy, okay? They just go irrational. And so a wolf will come, and they'll start licking that frozen blood. Well, as you can imagine, after a while, they cut their tongue. But they can't tell. The tongue is probably numb, you know, from the cold. And they think they're getting a good meal, but actually they're drinking their own blood as they keep licking and licking. And eventually, they bleed to death as they're greedily going for that blood. Well, that is often what happens with money and greed. Whereas we don't realize it, but our greed is actually hurting us. It's damaging us in the process. So anyway, verse 3, that's the walk. Verse 4 is the talk. Paul said that these are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. And so with our hearts and our lips full of thanksgiving, it's pretty hard for this type of talk to get out. Now, among other things, it reminds us of who we are, and it reminds us of our relationship with God. And if you're not used to doing this, giving thanks, I would encourage you to practice what I tell my children every night. I tell them that what I want you to do in your prayers, I want you to thank God for at least 3 things. Try it. You'll notice that our movies and our TV programs these days are just often filled with these things here in verse 4. And it's very easy for us to just adopt the language of our culture without even thinking about what it means, without even thinking about what we're actually saying. Well, the word for filthiness here, it's defined as obscenity, nastiness, deformed, and disgusting speech. Okay, this is gutter language, cuss words, stuff like that. And then silly or foolish talk, and that's speaking of senseless and stupid remarks. Things like racial slurs, things like, overgeneralizations. Some people fall into this when they're talking about politics. I've heard some people say, you know, we ought to just go and kill every Muslim in the world. Okay, that's just foolish. Don't say things like that. Christian speech is supposed to be dignified. It is supposed to be coming from a place of wisdom, not off-the-cuff, knee-jerk comments and off-color remarks. We need to think about what we are saying before we say it. And yes, this is something I think that many of us struggle with. And coarse jesting. Now, this is not talking about clean jokes and witty exchanges. All right, there's nothing wrong with that. The word here, it literally means easily turned. Like something that is good, and it's turned into something dirty. Okay, this is the locker room type of jokes. And much of the stuff that we get from comedians these days, stuff that's just rude, crude, and lewd. He said that these are not fitting. So these 6 things from verses 3 and 4 for the Christian should be like shoes that do not fit, or like gloves that do not fit. There's a picture of the O.J. Simpson trial. He's trying to make it look like it doesn't fit. Well, Paul, all right, he continued with the outcome of these unfruitful deeds of darkness in verses 5 and 6. And so first, no inheritance in the kingdom. He said that we know this with certainty. Okay, this belongs to the ABCs of Christianity. It's kind of a duh. And this is similar to a passage, to that passage in 1 Corinthians 6 that Phil Robertson quoted a few years ago to GQ that caused all that big stink. Do not be deceived. Neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, you know, the NIV says male prostitutes, nor homosexuals, nor thieves, nor the covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. Now, according to our passage, a covetous person is a what? Well, he's like a pagan idolater. Okay, he worships gold instead of God. And as you know, just about anything has the potential to take God's place and become our idol. Well, you remember what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. And that's the Aramaic word for riches. Well, Orbison made the comment, the irony of Paul's teaching here is that a greedy person is wanting more and more of God's creation, but will miss out on the true inheritance of all that God wants to give to his children. And just as a side, it's interesting to note here in the Greek that when it says the kingdom of Christ and God, the two nouns, Christ and God, they are preceded by one article. Okay, this is a way of distinguishing one person by the use of two terms, or at least putting the two terms on equal footing. Christ equals God. I'm always surprised at the Bible believers who deny the deity of Christ. Well, the next outcome is the wrath of God in verse 6. He said, let no one deceive you with empty words. How strong is peer pressure? And how easy is it for us to be talked into something we want to believe? Oh, God doesn't really mind. It's just a small sin. It's just a sinlet. It's not like you're murdering someone. Are you sure that's in the Bible? Oh, that was just cultural. So-and-so does it. You have to really experience sin in order to feel the grace of God, and so on and so forth. Empty words. This could also have been the early stages of antinomianism. And that was a big word to impress your friends. It means against law, and it was a type of Gnosticism that would later develop. See, they believed that no matter how you lived, the physical could not corrupt the spiritual. And they used the illustration that, well, if you drop a diamond in sewage and you leave it there for 1,000 years, you can just take it out and rinse it off and the sewage can't hurt it. And they said, well, that's the same with our soul. Just about anyone can come up with a nice illustration that's creative and clever. The problem is they're just empty words without biblical substance. How many people out in the world are convinced of things by empty words? As Fields warned, let no clergyman, sociologist, professor, psychologist, or anyone else deceive you by saying that you can practice sin and not suffer God's wrath. And of course, there have been a number of groups throughout history who have held to some form of antinomianism. And you can even find people today who will say things like, God likes to forgive, and I like to sin. This is a great relationship. This is a great gig. Well, the sons of disobedience, that's a term he used back in chapter 2, verse 2. Okay, those are all those who refuse to obey their Creator. They stand in contrast to the beloved children of God, chapter 5, verse 1, who are children of light, chapter 5, verse 8. Now, some people say, and they'll try to argue that, well, you know, the God of the New Testament is the God of love, in contrast to the God of wrath in the Old Testament. There's only one God, and he is the same in both testaments. God exhibits both love and wrath. As you can see here, we are definitely warned about the wrath of God in the New Testament. The question is, which one of those do you want to be the recipient of love or wrath? Well, then we have the obvious conclusion that we should come to in verses 7 and 8. Therefore, do not be partakers with them. See, who in their right mind would say, oh, I don't want the kingdom inheritance, but I do want the wrath of God? And he then said, for you were formerly darkness. Christians, they really need to remember their past. They need to remember their past before they found salvation in Christ. How could we ever think of going back? Who likes the idea of being in the dark and stumbling around? Well, it's more than that, though, because Paul said that we were darkness. And you think about it, what's the last thing that you want to do after you get all cleaned up and after you put on some white clothing? Well, jump back in the mud and the muck and mire. Unless, of course, you're a pig, because they seem to like that. Well, Paul, he went on to say, but now you are light in the Lord, walk as children of light. For the fruit of the light consists in all goodness and righteousness and truth. And that's what we're going to be looking at next week. Light and darkness. Do we want to go back to what we were? The sons of disobedience, participating in the unfruitful deeds of darkness. Well, if so, are we ready to accept the consequences of that lifestyle? The wrath of God with no kingdom inheritance. No, we are the children of light, and we must walk in that way. Think about it like this. Okay, in the early days of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, he came up with the 10 most wanted list, with people who have committed some of the most egregious crimes but have not yet been caught. Okay, so these are people who are dangerous to the public, and so they're often referred to as public enemy number one, number two, number three. And well, they need to be caught, desperately need to be caught. They need to be removed from public as soon as possible. Well, Paul, he made a list here, and he singled out some of the offenses that are to be captured and excluded from the life of the Christian because they are enemies of walking in the light and producing the fruit of light. See, these are things that we need to put on our top 10 most wanted list to get rid of. The Christian life is a challenging life. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. There are these things that we have to give up in order to live for Him. He has called us to be His holy ones. And so the idea that I can be a Christian and that I can go by that name and yet live just like the world, that is a terrible error according to the Apostle Paul. Christianity is not just about what we are saved from, spiritual death and hell, but it is also about what we are saved for, a life of holiness and obedient faith. As we struggle to be like Jesus and to get the sin out of our lives, a life that is trying to honor the Lord and trying to make Him proud. So, how important is producing good fruit? The fruit of light. Everyone produces fruit of some kind. So what's it going to be for you and me, Christians, living in Rolla in 2019?